From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We've heard America is one of the most church-going countries on the planet. Mega churches, televangelists get a lot of ink and airtime. And this campaign season, the candidates have spent a lot of time talking about faith. Diana Butler Bass, one of the country's top writers and thinkers on religion, says that's all largely a distraction from what's really going on in the American soul. She sees a quiet but powerful movement afoot, people leaving their churches and reimagining their spiritual lives. This hour on Point, it's a new spiritual awakening, she says, but the end of church as we've known it. Joining me now from Washington is Diana Butler Bass. She's a religious historian by training and one of the most widely followed commentators on religion, faith, and church life in this country. In USA Today, The Washington Post, The Huffington Post, and more, she's author of A People's History of Christianity and Standing Against the Whirlwind. Her new book is Christianity After Religion, The End of Church and the Birth of a New Spiritual Awakening. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Diana Butler Bass, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. I'm glad to be here.
What's going on?
Well, that's what a lot of people are asking. Hmm. And what's been happening over the course of the last decade is I think that we have seen what I call a great religious recession, where numbers about adherence, belief, and belonging to traditional denominations have all fallen off the boards. There's been a vast erosion of the conventional measures of religious faith. At the same time, though, there's been an increasing sense of longing that has been growing among the American people for new connections with God and with their neighbor, and people refer to that as spirituality. So what I argue is that we're seeing the end of religion, that is the end of conventional sorts of belief systems, conventional sorts of church going, and we're seeing the beginning of a renewal, an awakening, a reformation, whatever you like to call it, where people are reorganizing their faith lives around principles of experience and connection.
The last time I sort of paid attention to this in a close way, I mean, the impression I think a lot of people have had is that the fall off in attendance and membership was in old mainstream Protestant denominations, but that mega churches were bursting at the seams and evangelicals were bringing in big crowds. Is that the case, or has that changed as well?
That has changed in the last decade. Mainline churches have struggled a lot in the last four decades with membership decline and have had some isolated cases of success in individual congregations in local areas and turning around the picture in some regions of the United States. But their numbers are still not very good. What has changed in the last decade is the huge number of Roman Catholics who have left their church or who are drifting away even as we speak. And then there's also been a loss in evangelical denominations. The Southern Baptist Convention, for example, in the decade between 1996 and 2006, lost 2.2 million members, which is a huge number of people to go away. That I happen to be an Episcopalian, so I still belong to one of those old denominations. Mm-hmm. And we have 2.2 million members. Basically, the Southern Baptist Convention lost the entirety of my denomination over just 10 years. And other conservative denominations are also struggling. The conservative Presbyterian Church in America, which is the evangelical alternative to the liberal Presbyterian Church in the United States of America, they're seeing huge declines, as well as the Missouri Synod Lutherans, which is, again, another evangelical version of the larger sort of liberal mainstream Lutheran church. So it's not a pretty picture. There are declines across the board in America's three largest sort of Christian bodies, Roman Catholic, mainline Protestant, and evangelical Protestant.
Is this a specifically Christian trend? Do you see parallels to this, in the Muslim community, the Jewish community, the Hindu community, the Buddhist community?
Well, that's The main parallel is with Jews in America. Of course, Jews have been in the United States since the colonial days. And so the Jewish experience in the United States is somewhat like that of mainline Protestants, interestingly enough, in terms of their diversity, that they exist in liberal, conservative, different kinds of denominations of Judaism. But all the different forms of Judaism in the United States are suffering a decline. The other ones you mentioned, Islam and Buddhism and Hinduism in particular, are experiencing growth right now. And that's largely through immigration. And for Muslims, at least, it's also through high birth rates. And that used to be the case for the Roman Catholics, too, is that they used to have higher birth rates than Protestants, so they didn't experience erosion. And their low birth rates right now might be part of the reason why the Roman Catholic authorities are so worried about birth control.
You know, you describe this as not a pretty picture. That's from one perspective. On from another, your book kind of celebrates this and says there's something new being born here that the faithful, maybe wherever you come from under that umbrella, might welcome or embrace. What is that?
Well, it isn't a pretty picture if you are a denominational executive or if you're a
meaning
pastor.
A leader of a traditional church.
Right. If you're a bishop or a conference superintendent for the Methodists, or you are one of the national leaders of one of these main churches, or the bishops in the Roman Catholic Church, you know, that this is really quite worrisome. You know, the pews are emptying and the plates are less full. And so there's fewer people, less money. Inability in some cases to pay clergy, and certainly there's a struggle to make the ends meet in fixing buildings and paying for things like pension funds and health insurance for church employees. And so that's the way it's not a pretty picture. But I am not a church executive, and I'm not even a clergy person. I'm a person of faith who is a writer, and I work in the media and I observe religion. And from my perspective as a writer and as a participant who is in the pews, I don't think it's really all that terrible. What's happening is people are saying that the institution no longer is serving their deepest spiritual needs. And people in the pews are expressing themselves and asking for different things out of religious institutions. And the institutions have been very slow to respond.
You're saying it's not as though Americans are moving away from spirituality. And you're citing some polling survey results here. In 1962, pollsters found, you write, that 22% of Americans claim to have had a mystical experience of God. In 2009... more than double that, 48% of Americans confessed that they had had a mystical encounter with the divine. Are we just changing our sort of terms of reference here, or are Americans becoming, you know, mystics but not in the house of worship?
Well, I love that statistic because there is a way in which, yes, we are taking a very mystical or experiential turn in religion. The statistics all bear that out. And one of the ways that institutions have failed is that several weeks ago, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a Presbyterian, and she's one of these people who's had a powerful mystical experience of God, and she's afraid to tell anybody in her church. And so I said, well, why? She said, well, they're going to think I'm crazy. And so what has been the case in much of organized American religion is that there's been a real resistance to experiential or mystical styles of faith. Well, that's for Pentecostals, people say. But now there's a real sense in which everybody is at least walking towards territory that the Pentecostals have sort of long held, and that is this realm of experience and connection and encountering God in direct and immediate ways. Unmediated experience of God without an institution telling you how you're supposed to interpret it or how you're supposed to encounter God. And that is very frightening to people who have a lot invested in institutional religion.
This is fascinating terrain because, interestingly, you're talking about the end of church right in your title, but you're not talking about the end of faith. In fact, you're saying in this particular faith thread, Christianity after religion, for a lot of people, that's going to sound like an oxymoron. You're saying it's being proven not to be.
Yes. Just because it's the end of conventional church, there is no reason to think that this is the end of each one of these religions. Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, and Buddhism, and Hinduism are all undergoing a kind of a fight right now, a tension or a struggle between elements in every one of the traditions that want to focus their energy in institutional and authoritarian and hierarchical forms of that faith in order to control people. And oftentimes, the very people they're trying to control, the people in the pew who are saying, we want something different. We want to be connected with God and our neighbor in new ways. And the voice from the people, the voice from the pews, is very powerful. It's almost like it's a spiritual spring. If we use the language of the Arab Spring, we can think it's a spiritual spring in religions across the world.
We're going to look at that with Diana Butler Bass. Her new book is Christianity After Religion, The End of Church and the Birth of a New Spiritual Awakening. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
I know Jesus is on that main line. Tell him what you want. Jesus is on that main line. Tell him what you want. Jesus is on that main line. Tell him what you want. Call him up. 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 You can call him up and tell him what you want.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a new wave of spiritual believers, the faithful, leaving religion as we've known it. Diana, lots of interesting response to this online already. And here's one just right off the bat. You start talking about leaving church, and many people imagine that means leaving community. And a questioner writes at our website, it says, for quoting the Bible here, New Testament, Matthew, wherever two or three are gathered in my name, this is Jesus speaking in the Bible, there am I in the midst of them. What happens to the community that churches have represented when people are spiritual, not religious?
That's a great question. And I think it's actually a fallacy to say that religion automatically creates community and that spirituality is necessarily about individualism. Individualism is just an American issue or problem or characteristic, as it were. And it can manifest itself in either one of those two realms. I mentioned a couple moments ago that I myself am a churchgoer. I'm an Episcopalian. Mm-hmm. And I've been to dozens of church board meetings in my life and congregational meetings in my life where someone will get up and say, you know, if you dare, you know, move this candle or if you sing these new hymns or if you try to put an overhead screen in this congregation, I'm going to take all of my money and leave. And that's not community. That's individualism. As a matter of fact, that's one of the rawest acts of individualism that you can sort of engage in, is trying to force a community to do everything your way because you don't like it.
And yet you know there has been a lot of deep community in American churches. I'm sure you've experienced it. Many people have. Is there a community related to this new awakening that you're describing?
Yeah. So in the same way that people are not a community just because you put a bunch of people in a building that's made of bricks. It's just people in a building. You actually have to work on making community. You have to have connection, new connections. You have to have people who care about one another. You have to have people who are committed to something. And you have to have people who are willing to practice their faith together. And that can happen with spirituality. I have a good friend who is a yoga teacher, and she always points out to me about the different kinds of things that go on in her class. And for years, I had actually tried to learn yoga by myself. So I went out and I bought the DVD and I got the mat and I got some nice, you know, sort of exercise yoga clothes from Target and stuff. And I tried to do it at my house. And I finally got so frustrated with it. I said, I went to my friend and I said, I can't learn yoga. And she looked at me and she said, well, that's because you're not in a class. You have to have a community to learn these practices. And so, you know, we think of yoga as sort of the most sort of hyper spiritual kind of form of this new reorganizing spirituality. And yet it's taught in community, and it has traditions, and it has mentors, and it has a lot of things that you would typically associate with conventional church. So it doesn't have
Jesus.
Well, it does for some people.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's the heart of too many yoga classes.
Well, I actually know some that meet in churches that refer to themselves as Christian yoga, which is sort of an interesting thing.
Okay.
But the truth of the matter is that you can make community around spiritual practices, and you can have raw sort of individualism in churches. So it's not an issue of religion creates community and spirituality creates individualism.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different kind of way of thinking about things.
Let me ask you, in Time magazine, and you cite the famous Time story way back, was it 1962, Is God Dead?, the cover that sort of shook up the nation. And then everybody was abashed later because Christian congregations, evangelicals, Pentecostal, and others came roaring up in the decades that followed. But now, just in the very new issue that's just headed for the newsstands, Time now has these sort of 10 ideas that are changing our lives. And one of the 10 big things that they say is happening is what they call the rise of the nuns, N-O-N-E-S. They call it the fastest growing religious group in the U.S. is the category of people who say they have no religious affiliation, sometimes called the nuns, N-O-N-E-S. Their numbers have more than doubled since 1990. And they describe here a group of Americans getting together on a Sunday morning in what they call not church. And they pray and they engage in spiritual conversation and they deliver food if somebody's sick, or they work together to serve the poor. But here's a question that comes in from one of our listeners, Sally. And she writes, the shift you're describing, she thinks, is a shift toward values that are universal human values rather than the values that are particular to one faith or another. She says it's not a spiritual revolution. It's an ethical revolution, a humanist revolution of secular ethics. She writes, I don't quite understand how Miss Bass feels justified in claiming all this for spirituality. What about that, Diana?
That is a really good question, and that would be a great conversation to have over an extended period of time.
Here we are.
One of the things that I do think is interesting is that that category of the nuns, the people who have left church that don't want to have a label affiliated with their belief systems, they are a mixed bag. Some of them are humanists and some of them are atheists, and some of them still understand themselves to be attached to some form of religion. So the nuns aren't necessarily people who don't believe in God or don't think that God should have some sort of place in a framework of ethics or a framework of experience. So what I think we're actually moving toward, and the reason my book is called Christianity After Religion,
mm-hmm.
Somebody asked me the question when I was presenting it at a big church in Southern California, why didn't you call it just After Religion? And I say, well, fair enough. But what I'm really kind of interested in doing is thinking about if these religious traditions survive the 21st century, and I do think that there is an if that we can put in that sentence, what will they look like? And I think that one of the things that's going to come out on the other end of this revolution, this awakening, is that the religious traditions will be better friends with one another, and that they will be open to and in deep conversation with humanists and agnostics and atheists. So part of the spiritual awakening is for people of faith to be able to recognize the patterns of human beauty and human flourishing that are present in non-theistic and post-theistic communities. And I don't have a problem with that at all. I think that that's going to be a new place for us all to be as human beings, and that some of us can be there with God, and some of us can be there maybe with God, and other people can be there without God, in friendship and full commitment to the planet and to a renewed sense of human community. Well, I'm all for that.
This gets very open.
I hope that's where we're going.
It gets very open indeed. You quote Dietrich Bonhoeffer from his letters and papers from prison, saying, and this is obviously way back, saying, we are moving toward a completely religionless time. Then he asks, what does that mean? What does that mean for Christianity? If religion is only a garment of Christianity, then what is a religionless Christianity? You say non-theistic, post-theistic, then maybe that California audience member's question is the one. Why is Christianity in your book title? It sounds as though, what's Christian about it?
Well,
in particular, I guess I should add.
You know, that's a great way to push the question. And I think what's Christian about it is that Christianity remains, even though it's in this pattern of erosion and decay in the West, even in the United States now, as it has been in Europe for many, many, many decades now, Christianity remains to be the world's largest religious faith. And that it's having a hard time here, but in other parts of the world, it's growing like gangbusters, particularly in Africa, Asia, and South America. And so whatever happens in the 21st century, Christianity is going to be with us, and it's going to be part of that conversation. And my heart and soul and longing and passion is that we have a better, more open, more inclusive, more peaceful and more planet-oriented form of Christianity across the world than the rather divisive, hierarchical, authoritarian one that we have in many places at the moment. And so I think that where Christianity is being rearranged out of a culture of erosion and decline, and where Christianity is fresh and new in Africa, somehow we have to have a conversation about Christianity because it's so important in the history of the world. And it just doesn't disappear overnight. And even when it seems like it might be disappearing in the United States, where it has disappeared in parts of Europe, it's still part of our global community. It's still part of our global fabric. And in order to push towards a better human future, we need to engage Christianity, and we need to engage Islam, and we need to engage Buddhism. We need to engage these traditional religions in ways that are going to make sense for the future.
Questions by the boatload for Diana Butler Bass. Her new book is Christianity After Religion, The End of Church and the Birth of a New Spiritual Awakening. Diana, stand by. Lots of callers here. Mark in Tampa, Florida. Mark, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Diana.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Diana. How are you?
Well.
Hi, Mark.
Hi. Hey, I just wanted to make one quick comment. I saw a bumper sticker years ago that completely sums up my philosophy on this topic. The bumper sticker said, I have a great relationship with God. I just can't get along with his fan clubs.
Can't get along with his fan clubs. Well, of course, a lot of people did. Maybe fewer people do now. Are you in that camp, Mark?
Yes, absolutely. I consider myself to be a spiritual person. I am a believer in God or in some sort of spiritual force in the universe. But the churches have just turned me off. Actually, the same is true with myself and my wife.
So where do you get the teaching that supports you in your spiritual journey? Where do you get the community that might support you, Mark?
Well, community, I don't know, is it's not something I've actively sought out. My wife and I discuss it quite a bit. And, you know, the community aspect of it, I suppose, is important over the long term. But for at least for us, we haven't found it necessary.
Mark, I appreciate your call. Let's get in Tampa, from Tampa. Let's get one more, if I may, from North Charleston, South Carolina. And Harry, thank you very much for calling.
Tom, how you doing?
I'm well, Harry. You're on the air. What do you know?
Well, I think that, it's not that I know, but I mean, it's what I believe. I think that organized religions, when you get all into owning property and the different churches and all this stuff,
yes,
has went down because it doesn't serve the need of Christians. It doesn't, and the other religions, it's the same thing. It doesn't serve the needs of the individual. The individual has to find their own deity. And you have to do what your deity enlightens you to.
So are you just as happy then, Harry, if churches go away? Does that not matter to you?
No, you need the churches. Everybody needs to go to church. Right? The thing is that it's like being lonely in a crowd sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
The thing, it's, churches ain't Christian, really, because they don't put the emphasis on spreading their beliefs to people that perhaps don't have it or perhaps are having trouble with it. They don't try to help the sick people or...
Then why do you need to go, Harry? You say you need to go. Why?
Well, because everybody, when you get in a group, you might be lonely in the crowd one time or even two times.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty soon you're going to get another person in there and talk about something, and you get support. Everybody needs this support. Right? After all, they're Christians or Buddhists or Hebrews or Muslims too.
Mm-hmm. Harry, you're a wise man. I appreciate your call. Diana Butler, I appreciate it very much. Diana, what about that? Where in this spiritual but not religious, this world after church that you're talking about, where do people get the guidance, the support, the learning? I mean, it's hard to make up a moral life out of whole cloth, out of our each individual's mind, or spiritual life for that matter, isn't it?
One of the things that I think that those two calls illustrate, Mark and then Harry, is that 30% of the population would be like Mark, that when they're asked the question, are you spiritual or are you religious? One out of every three people, roughly, says that they're spiritual but not religious.
It's a category now. It's a checkbox on Match.com, the dating
site.
Yeah,
it is.
You know, atheist, agnostic, Christian, Protestant, Jewish, spiritual but not religious, and a lot of people check it.
And there's actually a study in Canada that shows that you have a higher chance of getting married if you check that box than if you check a religious box.
So,
But the other thing real quickly is that 48% of Americans say that they're spiritual and religious. So I think that that leans a little bit more into Harry's comments, is that there are people who are really asking serious questions about their spiritual lives and that they want some sort of community and that they are seeking a deeper sense of education and formation and learning. And they're looking towards their churches and doing that to do that. But as Harry pointed out, kind of heartfelt, in a really heartfelt way,
mm-hmm.
That the churches, at least that are around him, don't seem to be taking those questions or the community seriously enough. And so what I kind of wonder about in my book is I do talk about the 30%, the spiritual but not religious, and I think they have a huge amount to say towards traditional religion. But I also am worried about that 48%, the people who say they're both spiritual and religious. And I ask, you know, where are they getting sustenance? What are they expecting out of their churches? And is that 48%, the one out of every two Americans, is that the place where the real Reformation is going to be located?
Talk about what that might be. We're up against a break here, Diana. Diana Butler Bass is with us. Her new book is Christianity After Religion, The End of Church and the Birth of a New Spiritual Awakening. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about a new wave of spiritual believers, the faithful, leaving religion as we've known it. Diana Butler Bass joins us from Washington. Diana, here's Steve, who says online, and this may go to your sort of global trend a bit here. He says, I definitely put myself in the post-organized religious person camp. There's a mouthful, but it's a similar phenomenon, he writes, to what's happening in politics. Steve says the call of Jesus and the first Christians to leave behind the legalism of religion and oppression of politics and follow it a third way. He says Jesus was the alternative to oppression, legalism, greed, the first occupier, if you will. Steve sees a kind of you say it's akin to the Arab Spring. He's bringing Occupy in here, sort of a mashup of lots of trends. Maybe it's one trend, Diana.
Well, I want to say woohoo to Steve's question. That's a great response. It is a lot like politics, is that people who are on the sort of the receiving side of these traditional, conventional institutions and organizations have actually said enough. And in the book, I actually do have a section where I compare the rise of the independents in politics to the rise of the nuns or the unaffiliated in religion. And what we know about the independents in politics is that we don't know much. Some of them lean towards the Tea Party, and some of them lean towards Occupy Wall Street, and some of them are completely in the middle and they don't know what to think, and they're sitting on fences and they're waiting for something new to happen. And so I think that the same thing is true in the realm of religious faith and spirituality, and faith and spirituality, is that the new independents, the nuns, some of them are, disgruntled fundamentalists who can never find a church that's like conservative enough for them, that they think that all churches have abandoned teaching the gospel, or that all churches have abandoned the tradition. And so they're sort of just floating off, doing their own thing. And then there's people who are thinking that the churches have not gone far enough with theological renewal and reformation and reimagining a God for the future. And so those people are peeling off. And then there's the people who just feel like the churches and synagogues and mosques aren't serving them at all, and they're kind of in the middle. They don't know which way to turn. So I think there's a great deal of similarity between what's happening in our political life with the collapse of institutions and what's happening in our religious life with the collapse of institutions.
Very interesting.
So it opens the possibility for real institutional renewal, but that's going to happen in the future after we work through a lot of these feelings and passions that people have at this moment And we need some clarity about the theological and ethical direction of faith.
This has been a country of spiritual innovators and entrepreneurs, that's for sure. Sarah, maybe that's where we're headed again. North Andover, Massachusetts, Sarah's calling. Sarah, you're on with Diana Butler-Bass.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I work for a Unitarian Universalist congregation. I'm a director of religious education. Mm-hmm. And we find that a lot of our congregations are experiencing growth, first of all. And we find also that a fairly significant proportion of our members are people who grew up either in Catholic or Protestant denominations, in some cases Jewish. They were disillusioned and therefore left the religious communities in which they grew up. But then in many cases, when they become parents, they find that they really do want their children to have the benefit of being involved in a religious community, being involved in a community larger than themselves, and having a religious identity.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want, I think Ms. Bass said earlier, someone dictating to them or telling them how they should interpret their faith or how they should interpret their relationship with God, or even whether or not they have a relationship or believe in God. And that's how we find a lot of our families coming to us. In the Unitarian Universalist faith, they want that freedom to interpret their own religion or their own relationship with their faith.
I mean, are you marketing or celebrating here, Sarah, or both? Maybe a little bit. I mean, are Unitarian churches growing? I mean, there's still churches. Diana's describing people who maybe don't even want to be in a pew.
Sure. We find that many of our congregations are growing. I'm certainly not going to say, and I don't have a figure, I'm certainly not going to say every single one everywhere is growing. But many of our congregations are experiencing growth. And I do find that a lot of our members are families that fit the description that I just gave.
Sarah, I appreciate your call so much. Here online, Diana, we've got a couple of interesting sort of contrary comments related to this mirror. And here's one from Eric, who says he's a Missouri Synod Lutheran member. He says, I worry more about the dilution of the gospel message and its replacement with man-made and directed spirituality. You know, what is that, he's saying. On the other hand, Lee says, in fact, morality will grow stronger without an authoritarian notion of God. You can feel those in tension, maybe with Sarah in the middle somewhere, Diana. But, you know, the one worrying, well, what is it that people are following, believing, pursuing here? On the other hand, you know, less top-down teaching, more morality? Does it really work that way?
Sarah's comment is a really smart observation about what's going on in the world. She's looking out her window, in a sense, looking at the weather, the spiritual weather in her neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And she sees growth with, a small slice of Unitarian Universalist congregations. But that doesn't surprise me, because there was a study that came out at the end of last year from Hartford Theological Seminary, which is not too far away from you all, mm-hmm. up there in Boston, that revealed the surprising fact that throughout the first decade of the 21st century, America's most spiritually vibrant congregations were also America's most theologically liberal congregations. And when this little fact was published in the larger survey, the people who were writing up the executive summary even said, it seems counterintuitive, but this is what we found. And I think that one of the things that Sarah points to in her comment is that 48% that are floating around who are looking for this new kind of spiritual understanding, and that yet they still see something valuable in the idea of a beautiful old building with a community and with a history and with, mm-hmm. Even dog-eared hymnals with boring songs in them. My stepson, who's 22 years old, he likes those old hymns. He thinks they're lovely. And so there are people who are trying to connect the two. And I think that some of America's congregations, evidently, according to the Hartford Seminary report, the ones that are more liberal denominations actually have a better chance of connecting with this new spirit of spiritual awakening that is moving around the country. So I think that Sarah, being kind of in the middle between those two mm-hmm. things that you quote from the internet, she's probably, I would say that congregation sounds like it is right in the territory of awakening. Now, that's not going to be Christianity after religion. Unitarianism is got some Christian roots, but it has lots of roots in other things too. Mm-hmm. But it certainly is going to be a sort of congregational life after religion, and that the Unitarians have a really wonderful kind of embrace of a variety of traditions that they can teach their children. And I say, sort of more power to them in the 21st century. My own Episcopal tradition, we're very much Christian, but we try to do that in a really deep and open way. And we get in trouble for it a lot. But nevertheless, I think that there's, in those kinds of mainline traditions, the real possibility of institutional renewal for the future. But they can't be concerned about fixing the roofs or structural renewal of their institutions. Nobody cares about that. The question for
Unitarian... Sooner or later becomes a problem, right, when the rain comes in.
That's right. Eventually it becomes a problem, but that's not what brings people into those congregations. What people are looking for is this sort of lively connection with God and with their neighbor. And so, insofar as that is being embodied in the congregation, then the roof and the structural stuff can be done later. But in the meantime, what has to happen is people have to be able to create new connections of faith in a very different kind of world. And they're going to have to be connections that are loose and fluid and open, and ones that are geared towards friendship with people who have different views rather than exclusivity.
You say connections of faith, and maybe that's it, but I'm not sure. This is a very wide open range here. Still kind of looking for that finger feel understanding of this awakening. Dan in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Dan, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having my call.
Yes.
Quick question. It seems to me that this trend of people embracing their spirituality and kind of losing their faith, to me it sounds like a trend of people moving towards atheism and humanism, but they're so afraid of the stigma that comes with that label that they essentially just kind of put out this blanket statement that says, I'm not faithful, but I am spiritual. And it seems that eventually we're leading to a time when people will just accept the fact that they are atheists, and they'll kind of get rid of this spiritual blanket and be a lot more comfortable with that term.
That is interesting. Thank you, Dan. Diana, what about it? Is what you're describing here sort of atheism in disguise, rich and connected as it may be?
Well, I like his question. It's sort of like I'm describing a way station to a completely atheist or post-theist world. I suppose some people might see it that way, but he said something very interesting. He said people losing their faith. I don't think that's what's happening. People are losing their faith in institutional religion, and that's an entirely different thing than people losing their faith. People still have some forms of faith, and they're desperately trying to find out where they can live that out, either in a way that they have to leave a community and just do it with their spouse, like Mark did on that previous call, or Harry's call about, well, you know, I just go in the church and I feel like I'm isolated in a crowd. You know, it's like people still have faith.
But let's be real clear. What do you mean by faith? Do you mean faith in God or faith in a journey, faith in, spirit?
92% of Americans still say that they believe in God. And so that's a huge number, and it's bigger than any other Western country. And some of that belief is what I might call loose. To give Dan the point, we have a lot more atheism than we did in past years, and it does register on polls. But we still have a country that is overwhelmingly somehow wants to say that it trusts God. So that piece is still there, but the institutional piece of it has collapsed. So you have 92% of people who say they believe in God, and you have only 21 or so percent of people on a weekly basis who attend any kind of religious service. And so that's what I call that's a gap of adherence between what people say they feel in their hearts and that they want to give some assent to a higher power, this universal spirit, a God, yet they have nowhere to put that because they feel like the institutions have failed them. And so that is changing our culture. It's a little like saying, I believe in democracy, but I don't want to be a Democrat or Republican because the political parties have failed. And when those kinds of gaps break up between or open up between ideals and the ability to put them in practice in institutional expression, that's when you have cultural crisis. And I think that's what we have now with religion.
Our listeners have a very wide perspective here. Brendan Harishvara writes, a similar transformation happened over 2,000 years ago in Hinduism when Brahmanical Vedic traditionalists started to lose ground to tantrics in Buddhism and Hinduism. He writes, the reformation of Hinduism in the 7th century helped consolidate many of these more personal systems of mysticism and reform the establishment Vedic system of Hinduism. I mean, you know, your title is Christianity After Religion. Then you quote Dietrich Bonhoeffer asking, what is a religionless Christianity? What is it, Diana?
A religionless Christianity is an experience of God, and it's Christian because for people who are part of that story, part of those traditions, that experience happens primarily through some connection or understanding of Jesus. So it's an experience of God through or with Jesus that results in deep personal transformation and leads to doing justice in the world.
How is that different from a religioned Christianity?
Well, a religioned Christianity says that can only happen by having certain kinds of rites or rituals or passages, and it can only happen with particular kinds of interpretations of the Bible. And so what happens about that experience that Christians have had of God through Jesus that has changed them is that institutions try to take that experience and they say, oh, well, this is how you have it. You have to have it through gated communion. You have to have it through having a born-again experience. You have to have it by listening to the way we interpret the Bible. And if you don't agree with us, then you don't count. And so what people are rejecting and have been rejecting, I think, for as long as at least that Dietrich Bonhoeffer quote has been around, people have been rejecting those garments, those formalized structures of dogma that say do it our way or the highway, in favor of an unmediated experience. And so I think that the unmediated experience part is what is winning in the early part of the 21st century. And that unless religious institutions know that, and try to figure out ways of renewing themselves around the longings, the real longings of people, not to commit to a dogma or an authority, But the real longings of people to commit to a living spirit that will transform their lives and transform the world, then those religious institutions are going to fail.
We've just got a minute. I hear you calling it a crisis, and yet at the same time I hear you and read you welcoming this moment.
Well, crises, aren't they always the parts of human experience that change us the most deeply? I always welcome crisis in my own life because those are the times in which I've changed and seen the world afresh. It's always from death that comes new life. And perhaps that's why I'm still a Christian, because that's sort of the central insight of the Christian story, is that when something dies, it's not the end, it's just the beginning.
And you see the sprouts of that new wave being born.
I do.
Is it something durable?
Yes. I trust that it is.
Diana Butler-Bass's very interesting window that you open up, a really interesting book. It's Christianity After Religion, The End of Church, and the Birth of a New Spiritual Awakening. And it looks, for that matter, right beyond Christianity as well. We appreciate your being with us today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Diana Butler-Bass. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.